My Big Breakup by I.M. Saab, read by Viluta. You never wake up saying, "Today my world will be rocked." Or if you do, then you just skip into work all juiced up with world-rocking anticipation, and then slip on some floor wax and go skating down the hall on your chest, while the janitor curses at you for streaking the linoleum. In other words, a day like any other. This morning when I woke up, I thought, today I would like a taco salad. Unfortunately, the hospital cafeteria didn't have any taco salad, so I grabbed a piece of carrot cake instead. And while I was eating it, I slipped on some floor wax and went skating down the hall on my chest, and the janitor clucked his tongue at me for wasting good cake. I didn't have any indication of the world rocking, though, till much later. Dr. Cox found me after rounds. Nelly, you and I need to have a little talk. Sure, Dr. Cox. What up? He was walking his usual clockwise route, past the pharmacy and the storage closet, down the corridor with the last-ditch exam rooms, room very dark, and room strangely stinky. We stopped walking right before room strangely stinky. That, in there, today, what was that exactly? I tried to imagine what he might be talking about. Instead, I imagined horses, white horses, running free. When? Dear Lord, newbie, I know it was almost a whole entire hour ago, but you were awake when we set up that nice young man with his nice young morphine drip, were you not? Oh, the sickle cell guy, I nodded. 7 foot tall, never played a game of basketball in his life. Really into model trains. I love model trains. Did we get the results on the coke panel? Cox sighed, a long, heavy, oppressed sound, and he rested both hands on the top of his head. No, we did not. And seeing as you just ordered it, 20 minutes ago, I think we can hang out for a while before we send the dogs in to tear up the poor schlubs working in the lab tonight, don't you? This is usually where I get bored. Look, Dr. Cox, I said, I really have to catch up on some charts, and I... Park it, Cox shouted, and pointed through the open door of the stinky exam room. I shuffled in obediently and found a chair. Cox didn't sit. Aren't you sitting? I asked. Not right this minute, no, but I'll be sure to tell you just the very instant I decide to. Then he sat on the bed and covered his face with his hands. You all right, Dr. Cox? He looked up. His legs were spread and his scrubs were hiked up, revealing a pair of unmatched tube socks poking up out of his sneakers. He rested his palms on the edge of the bed and leaned into his shoulders. Ah, I don't know, he said, rolling his googly eyes. Any admission of uncertainty from Dr. Cox always puts me on edge, because I'm never sure if he's teasing me or not. If I assume he genuinely wants to talk, more often than not he recoils and laughs in my face. Sometimes he even has an audience ready to join in with the mocking. But we were in the stinky room, so I took a gamble this wasn't one of those times. Something about the patient? I asked, trying to remember the guy's name. Stretch? That wasn't it. Eh, you did good in there, Gloria. You took a good history. You remembered your training, got him nicely tranked up before asking any hard questions, and you accurately diagnosed his condition even before you ordered the tests. You didn't need me at all. I paused that for a minute. He was, what, resentful? Sad? Proud? Thirsty? Dr. Cox, I said, do you know all your facial expressions look the same? I mean, there's rage, but they're all basically variations of, it's a shame I am too tired to kill you right now. It is a shame, he agreed, and then he laughed. And that was a brand new facial expression. And even his googly eyes were laughing. I was proud of you in there, he said. You've come a long way. Thank you, I said, gathering my pile of charts. Anyway, I really do have... I stood halfway up, but his I'm too tired to kill you face told me to sit back down again, so I did. Cox took a deep breath. Listen, Clarice, this is not easy for me to say. In fact, it's so damn hard I don't know why I'm even trying, since I'll almost surely regret it. Come to think of it, he trailed off. Now I was intrigued, very intrigued. No, what? You've turned into a competent doctor, Cox said. You don't need me anymore, okay? Sad, but yet fantastic. I clapped a hand over my mouth and then realized that that was an incredibly girly thing to do, and I let the hand fall into my lap. No, that's not true. I need you. You're my mentor. Yeah, yeah, quack, quack, you don't. He stopped for a deep breath in through his nose. It looked very refreshing, so I took one too. So, anyway, bottom line. I'm not gonna be hanging around you anymore. Yeah. He launched himself from the bed and stood up. Have a nice life, or whatever. I stood up too. Have a nice life? Isn't that a little melodramatic? I mean, we're still gonna be working at the same hospital, right? Just because I mean, when I pass you at the nurse's station, I can still say yo, and you can still call me a girl's name, and I'll still make you look at stuff, right? He didn't turn around. No, Dr. Dorian, he said, and I got a little chilly when he used my name like that. We will not. I tolerated you because it was my job. Now that job is over. Ta. And he left the room, and I didn't see him again anywhere all day. After I finished with my last patient, I went to chill out at the nurse's station. Carla had been off for a couple of hours, but Turk was on a night shift, and so she stuck around to taunt him and bring him snacks. There were snickerdoodles in a Tupperware bowl, and I nibbled one idly while I waited for her to get off the phone. Hey, Carla, can you help me with something? She put the lid on the bowl of snickerdoodles. These are Laverne's, she said. Bambi, you know better than to take things that belong to people who can beat you up. I put my half-eaten cookie on the desk. I do, I admitted. Now, what's on your mind? You know Dr. Cox better than anyone around here, I said. You know, except for me, maybe. Carla laughed. I know Dr. Cox better than anyone around here, including you, hotshot. But nice try. He tormenting you? I hoisted myself up onto the counter and swung my legs. That's just it, I said. He's not. And he called me Dr. Dorian. Carla, I'm frightened. Hold me? I'll pass, she said. You smell like you've been in the weird stinky exam room all day. I sniffed my arm. I thought it smelled nice, so I sniffed it again. Bactine and egg salad. Then he broke up with me, I said. Just up and went away, just like that. Poor Bambi, said Carla, still a safe distance away. His boyfriend doesn't love him anymore. I swatted her. Come on, are you serious about this? Dr. Cox doesn't consider it a full day unless he stormed out on someone. I shook my head. I don't know, I said. This felt different than the other times he's broken up with me. I replayed those words in my head and decided that was a joke I probably shouldn't be perpetuating in my own time. I mean, the other times he told me he never wanted to see me again. He called me Dr. Dorian. Carla pursed her lips. Uncharacteristic, but not terminal, she said. Maybe he ran out of girls' names. He always falls back on newbie, I said. Carla put a hand on my stinky knee. You're not a newbie anymore, she said. And then Turk came wheeling down the corridor with two fists in the air, and Carla leaped over the nurse's station and went to give Turk some small kisses. I swung my legs and tried not to watch Turk stick his hand down the back of Carla's pants. What now? Asked the janitor. Something wrong with the way I'm dressed today? I blinked and found him in my field of vision. What? No, no, I was just, you know, zoning, just staring into space. Not staring at anything in particular, just blankness. Right, he said. So now I'm nothing. Now I don't even register. Well, that's the way it is with servants, you know. Speak when spoken to. I get it. I didn't even have the energy to fight. Right, I said. Yes, that's precisely it. I knew it, he said, and he mopped away. But because I wasn't looking at Carla and Turk, and because I wasn't looking at the janitor, I looked the other way, down the hall to the elevator's bay, where Dr. Cox was waiting with the up button pushed. He turned around and saw me, and I swear to God he took off like a purebred greyhound for the stairs. The elevator dinged, and the doors opened, and Dr. Cox was nowhere to be seen. "This is weird," I said. "Totally," agreed Turk, who was eating a snickerdoodle. I hopped down from the counter and set off after Dr. Cox. I caught up with him at the 6th floor landing, and he was panting like he'd sprinted the whole way there. The look on his face said he was very much too tired to kill me, but if I'd kindly wait a moment for him to catch his breath, he would be more than happy to oblige. I decided not to give him the opportunity. "Look, Dr. Cox, this is totally insane," I said. "There's no reason for you to be avoiding me." His big, scary eyes got even googlier. "Avoiding you? Oh, honestly, Lillian, if I were avoiding you, would we be standing here having this conversation?" I liked the Lillian, but the rest didn't seem to make any sense. "What?" "Yes, because I chased you down. You're not like... you don't have stealth mode or anything. You're just avoiding me." He sighed and pulled himself up to his full height. "First off, I do indeed have stealth mode. I just choose not to use it. Second off, yes, okay, I was avoiding you. There, you got me. Now let's play hide and seek. What do you say? I'll hide, you count to 9 million, and then come find me, okay?" He pushed at the 6th floor door, but it was locked, and I stepped in front of him to block the stairs. "No," I said. "I want you to tell me what's going on." "Nothing," he said, drawing out the word and shaking his head as if I'd asked the stupidest question in creation. "This, newbie, you and me." He flashed his hands back and forth between us a couple times before letting them flutter at his sides. "This, whatever it is, it's over. Time to move on. It's been real. Do be sure to send a card at Christmas, blah, blah, blah. Over." I remembered what Carla had said. "I'm not a newbie anymore," I said, "and that means our relationship has to change, maybe. But we're pals, right?" Dr. Cox laughed, a familiar and comforting, sinister laugh. "Oh, no, 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 little princess, we're not pals. I'm a doctor. You work here, too. For a while, we had an interesting sort of rapport that mostly involved you driving me batshit insane, but that era is blessedly over, and we can move on to a more enlightened future in which I don't have to see you ever again." "Dude, you're nuts," I said. "Seriously, did something happen at home, or..." He laughed again and clapped his hands with a little bit of maniac glee. "Very good, Betsy. Put that psych rotation to work. That's what I like to see." The truth was, I'd been putting everything I'd learned in all my psych classes to work all day, and still couldn't come up with a satisfactory explanation for Dr. Cox's behavior. "I'm just saying, maybe it's not about me?" I tried. "Something else in your life's been, I don't know, maybe there's a woman, or Dr. Kelso maybe did something, or maybe a family member." He rubbed his face, hard. "Fine," he said. "Just stop naming things. You want to know what's going on?" I wondered if I did. He looked scared and enormous, all thick-necked and barrel-chested, in his blue t-shirt and scrubs pants that were still a little too short. "I do," I said. "This," he said, doing that hand thing back and forth between us again. "This. Do you have any idea what this does to me?" "Oh, don't answer that, Kelly. I know you don't. You just think about yourself, your needs. You come to me when you've got a question, or when you're just too damn lazy to solve your own problems. And then, at the end of the day, you go out with your little friends and you never once stop to think about all the endless, droning, torturous hours I've spent babysitting you and just what kind of hideous toll that might be taking on my life. And I mean, sure, I understand that to you I'm some sort of superhero and I probably don't have any feelings or any needs of my own. And granted, next to you I really am basically a superhero. I mean, at least as far as the fact that I'm miles more intelligent and miles more attractive and far better doctor than you could ever hope to be. But just for a minute, if you would be so kind as to pretend that I'm a human being, that'd be pretty much dandy. And then maybe you'd realize that you've taken 2 years of my life that, oh, I'm never really gonna get back." It hit me like the proverbial truck. "I didn't realize I was such a chore for you," I said, through my teeth. "I guess I just thought..." "No, you didn't," he said, crossing his arms over his massive chest. "You didn't think." "Okay," I agreed, feeling smaller every minute, imagining Cox there with a huge rubber mallet just pounding me deeper into the floor with every word. So you see now why I'm just so damn thrilled that you're finally ready to fly on your own two fuzzy little wings, and I can get back to continuing my own slow march towards death, unfettered by your insipid, interminable questions. Sure, I said, 2 inches tall and squeaky. I'll stay out of your way, if that's what you really want. He nodded. You've made me the happiest girl at the prom. You can go away now. So I did. My shift was over, but I was so weirded out from my conversation with Dr. Cox that I wasn't ready to go home. Turk was still in surgery, so I went up to watch him for a while. But even the usually delightful bowel resection didn't cheer me up. I kept replaying the conversation over and over in my head, trying to figure out what I was missing or where I'd gone wrong along the way. Sometimes when I replayed it, I wore a funny head. And sometimes Dr. Cox was an alien from Alpha Centauri sent to frighten the children of Earth into submission. And sometimes I was his ex-wife Jordan. And those times the conversation almost made sense. Then I tried it when he was Jordan, but that one was creepy and ended up with us having sex in the stinky room. And then I couldn't shake the image, even when I replaced him with Elliot, Todd, Turk, and the janitor. After the janitor one, I went to the bathroom to wash my hands and face a lot. The bottom line, as far as I could tell, was that Dr. Cox didn't like me, that he never had liked me, and that for 2 years he'd just been doing his job so well, he'd fooled all of us. Every available fact supported that theory, but I didn't buy it. 2 years was a long time, and I knew him better than that. He does like me, I said, raising a fist in the air. That's nice, sighed Ted, the hospitalist's attorney. I have a set of daily affirmation tapes that like me. I almost never need to take lithium anymore, except on work days. Fantastic, I said. Turk's surgery let out, and I gave my boy some props on his bowel resection, and we knocked fists, but it felt empty without Dr. Cox. I followed Turk into the locker room and watched him change. Carla and I are gonna go grab some beers, Turk said. When do you get off? I got off at 10, I said. I'm just, you know, chillin'. Turk peered at me. Here? I shrugged. Chillin's chillin', man. Don't matter where. I would beg to differ, said Turk, zipping up his sweatshirt. This place is not conducive to any sort of chilling. This place is the anti-chill. I looked at the floor. You speak the truth, I said. I do find myself unable to chill. You look bleak, my man, Turk said. Come get a brewski. We'll mech on the ladies. Carla will kick our asses at the pool table and you'll feel better. We ambled down the hall towards the elevator, past the surgical scrub room, where Ted was still standing and muttering to himself. They do like me, he whispered. I am an integral part of society, and I am appreciated. His sigh was so low and so sad that I could hear the rats in the hospital ward scurrying off to be with their families and loved ones. I'm worried about Dr. Cox, I said to Turk. You ever worry about how much you obsess over that man? Turk asked. 'Cause that might be worth some consideration, if you know what I'm saying. I've known you for almost 10 years, and I swear, J.D., I ain't never seen you so wrapped up in another person as you are with Dr. Cox. Even that girl in college, you know. I let my brain take a little vacation back to Hampstead Hall, when Lisa Chen finally kissed me, after I'd been stalking her for only 2.5 years. Lisa Chen, I said. She was hot. I wonder where she is now. The Yucatan Peninsula, Turk said sagely. The elevator doors opened on the Todd, snorting. You could tend my peninsula, snorted the Todd. Seriously, man, Turk said. Dr. Cox is not your father. He's not your girlfriend. Hell, he ain't even your mentor anymore. He's just a guy. The sooner we realize that, the better. We were almost to Turk's car when I saw a bulky, shadowy figure sitting on the bicycle rack, swinging its legs and showing off a pair of mismatched tube socks. You guys go, I said to Carla and Turk. I'll see you later. J.D., you're just gonna piss him off, said Carla. Are you sure you want to do this? I thought about Lisa Chen and the 2 years I'd spent following her around campus. I'm sure, I said. Lata pliers. Don't stay out too late, man, Turk said. It's past midnight, and I don't want to have to haul your ass out of bed tomorrow. "Fear not," I said, and waved a goodbye, and crossed the pavement to where Dr. Cox was sitting alone in the dark. He was not entirely thrilled to see me. "Jesus Christ, Samantha, we are not in the hospital anymore. This is the world out here, do you get that? The world, where I am under no legal or moral obligation to talk to you." "I don't care," I said, scooting up to sit on the bike rack beside him. "I've been doing a lot of thinking about us, and I've got some stuff I want to say." Dr. Cox let out a long, caricatured sigh. "As long as I don't have to listen," he said, "you talk, I'll sing songs from operettas in my head." "Look," I said, "for whatever reason, you're important to me. Your approval means a lot to me, and so does your friendship, and I'm not ready to give it up just because I properly diagnosed sickle cell anemia." "And what reason might that be, newbie? Come on now, you said you've been doing a lot of thinking. Let's see if the mouse on the wheel in your brain made it all the way to the tasty cheese." I pursed my lips. I actually hadn't done that part of the homework, but I was a doctor, and I was trained to think on my feet. "Maybe because you're a good doctor," I said. "You don't mince words, you don't care what people think. You do what you want. You do what you think is right. I admire that." "Oh gosh, Cecile," he screwed up his face into a shit-eating grin, "you just make my heart go pity-pat." "Stop," I said. "I was tired of this. I wanted a new game. For whatever reason, I know I'm important to you, so why don't we just cut the crap and you tell me what meaningless catastrophe in your empty life caused you to get your knickers in a twist and piss all over me today?" "Feisty," he cheered. "I like that in a girl. And if we just gloss right over that bit about my so-called empty life and go straight to the part where I piss all over you, that'd be just puppies and roses." I grabbed him by an arm, which was thick and surprisingly hard. "Don't you get tired of this show?" I asked. "I mean, seriously, it must be exhausting having to put on such an elaborate performance any time you get asked a personal question. Wouldn't it be easier to just say what was bugging you? In the interest of not wasting precious years of your life and so on." "Fine," he said. He looked straight at me, his scary eyes burning holes in my skull. "The truth is, you nailed it. My life is empty. Aside from this place, where I, incidentally, am not only a good doctor, but I just might be the very best doctor in the unit, I have absolutely nothing. My friends hate me, my back is starting to spasm, which means I can't bench 220 anymore, even though I could 6 months ago, which means I'm getting older, and once that starts, well, it just doesn't stop, does it? Carla's throwing her life away on that showboating jockstrap, and at the end of every day I go home to an empty apartment and watch reruns of Taxi. In fact, I spent more time with Annie Kaufman than just about anybody else, and newbie? Turns out, Latka's not really my type. So that leaves you." I felt a strange sensation in my chest, a sort of spreading coolness mixed with nausea, and an even more inexplicable sensation a little lower down my special area. "That leaves me what, sir?" Cox snorted. "Relax there, Buffy. I'm not going to take away your precious flower or beg your father for a loan on a starter home." The weird chestal and groinal feelings got weirder and twitchier, and my face felt hot. "I don't follow," I creaked. "J.D., Cox said. "Dr. Dorian. I'm not proud of this. In fact, I'd do just about anything to make it all go away. But it seems that I have developed a kind of affection for you that leads to a lot of sleepless nights and choking off the old weasel." I just about choked myself. I raised my hands to my mouth like a girl and promptly fell backwards off the bike rack and landed soundly on the pavement with a thump. I lay there for a minute, looking up at the stars. "Oh," I said, finally. "So, you see then, newbie, why it's really for the best that we just part ways here and go off to seek our respective fortunes. Because it turns out that through some sick twist of psychology I find your breed of bent arousing, and I'm just not interested in being aroused anymore. Since this is clearly a road to ruin, what with you and your party girlfriends and your high fives and your non-arthritic joints and ligaments, I thought I'd spare myself any further unnecessary torment." I looked at the stars some more. Dr. Cox, a big queenie fruit. I would not have guessed. I wondered if Carla knew. I wondered if Jordan knew. I wondered why I couldn't stop staring at his round tight ass up there on the bike rack, and why this time in the fantasy it was Dr. Cox who threw me down on the bed in the stinky exam room, and called me a guild name, and made me climax in a shower of comets and unicorns and fireworks. I pulled myself to my feet and walked around the bike rack, so I was staring Cox right in his scary googly eyes, which weren't so scary anymore, which were actually kind of beautiful and sad. I said, I mean, I obviously have some kind of strange fascination with you as well. I didn't think it was the sort of fascination that had to do with the underpants area, but I may have been wrong. His nostrils flared. Please don't do this, he said. I'm not kidding. Neither am I said. I don't, I mean, I honestly don't know what's going on with us, with me. But I feel like it'd be stupid not to find out. No, he shook his head wildly. No, Mabel, it would be stupid to find out. Really, astonishingly very stupid. Stupider than that nervous kid with the stupid polo shirts. Really, beyond stupid. So I kissed him. I reached up and took his big Dr. Cox shoulders in both hands and leaned in and kissed him. And he pushed me away and spat a little bit on my mouth. Dr. Cox, I'm going home now, he said, hopping down from the bike rack. If you have any sense at all, you'll do the same, and we will never speak of this again. I grabbed him by one big muscled arm again and pulled him towards me. If we're not going to speak of it again, what can it hurt to just see, you know? His eyes were wild. It could hurt me, okay? Do you get that? Because I thought I already spelled it out, but if you need the remedial version, I'd be happy to put together a little presentation with puppets and flashcards and maybe a catchy jingle so you'll be sure to remember all the salient points. Did I not mention that I've wasted 2 years of my life on this? And while this might be a fun little kinky experiment for you before you go back to your Barbie dolls and frat parties, this is my life we're playing around with here, and if you don't mind, Dr. Dorian, I'd really rather not set out to purposefully ask the universe to crap all over me, since it seems to do a fine job of it all by its lonesome. Something clicked. I didn't let go of his arm. So that's what you meant when you said I didn't think about your needs, right? Did I get it? He sighed. Gold star, newbie, he said, but his heart wasn't in it. Well, fuck off, I said. I spent 2 years of my life trying to impress you, you know, I said. And I haven't got much in the way of fringe benefits either. Well, aside from the fact that I've learned a lot about medicine, and how to talk to patients, and how to deal with Dr. Kelso, and the best places to hide food if you don't want people to steal. And, yeah, so, fine, I got a lot from you, but I pay you back in my own way. And what way is that? He asked, in that same defeated tone. I'm a credit to your teaching, I said, feeling like an asshole. You know, in the hospital. Scrumdiddlydumptious, he said. The twitching in my chest and my man parts was back with a vengeance. I hadn't felt this nervous since Sarah Klugman trounced me at debate camp and then threw me down behind the co-ed showers. I cut my scalp on a rock and I got bitten by a spider. It was the best night of my life, until maybe now. Dr. Cox was staring down at me weakly, but he still looked scrumdiddlydumptious himself, from his broad arthritic shoulders to the sizable round bulge at the fly of his jeans. Listen, I said, you say I'm ready to take my own patients, to make my own decisions, so let me make this one. You may think I'm going to hurt you, and one or both of us might totally end up getting hurt, but we can't use that as an excuse not to try. You say your life's so empty. That's why, Perry, you're afraid to go after what you want. The color came back to his face, along with a familiar spastic fury. Don't call me Perry, Claudia, he said. Not ever. Then don't call me Dr. Dorian, I said. Then I hurt myself and pursed my lips and thought about it and realized I meant what I said. It makes me feel strange. It's less intimate. You're a fruitcake, Dr. Cox laughed. An almost friendly, seething laugh, as opposed to the standard psychotic seething laugh I was so used to. You do understand that you have some very debilitating mental deficiencies, don't you? I do, I nodded, and then I took his head in both hands and kissed him again, and this time he kissed me back. We sank to the ground and leaned against the concrete base of the bike rack, and he slid his hands up under my shirt and tweaked my man nipples. and I was most assuredly aroused and also surprisingly okay with it. He pulled back. I have wanted to do that for a while, he said, tipping his head to one side and sizing me up. Somewhat anticlimactic. I tucked his shirt from the waistband of his jeans and ran a hand across his abs and was moderately embarrassed that his gut was flatter and harder than mine. I don't get a lot of time to work out, I said. I do mostly cardio. That's it, Delilah, he said, kissing me again. Aerobic size away those unsightly pounds and inches. It was almost 2 a.m, and there was no one in the back parking lot. Even the ambulance bay was quiet, and most of the lights in the hospital were off. A quiet Wednesday night. The air was warm and clear, and the stars were out, and I wanted to impress Dr. Cox more than I ever had before. Dr. Cox, I whispered, losing his fly and tugging his jeans down over his hips. Shh, he said. Don't worry. He shoved his face under my shirt, kissing at my chest, chewing on a nipple and letting out a low growl. You're not gonna disappoint me. You've already made me prouder than I can say. You're a damn good doctor, J.D. I mean, Cheryl. I felt like I was going to fly apart with glee. I said the first thing that came to mind. You have a fantastic body. I know, he said. I assure you, your world will be rocked. My world was already rocked. The end.